Thank you for listening to the CPA Trendlines podcast, a production of CPATrendlines.com, now available on iTunes. CPA Trendlines presents an episode of The Disruptors.
Welcome to Accounting Disruptor Conversations. I'm your host, Liz Farr from CPA Trendlines. My guest today is Byron Patrick, General Manager and Integrator at BotKeeper. How are you today, Byron?
I'm outstanding. Thanks so much for having me, Liz.
Well, I'm glad to have you. Enjoyed meeting you at a couple of conferences over the last year, and just wanted to have you on here to share some more of your brilliance.
I appreciate it. I always enjoy our conversation, so I'm ready for it.
All right. Well, accounting talent has been really hard to come by, and this has been a global problem for years.
Yep.
The pandemic made it worse. And so what are some ideas that you have for making things better? And what have you seen firms do successfully?
You're right. It has certainly been a theme for a few years now, and very much, I would say, lit on fire here in the last 20 months or so. It may sound cliche, especially coming from me and what I do today, but there is so much opportunity to use technology to help with easing the pressure and the burden of the day-to-day capacity challenges that firms have. And, you know, I think a lot of firms historically have kind of they've had their playbook, they've been running on their playbook, it's been a successful playbook, and it's their comfort. And, you know, bringing in new technology, new tools can be a little bit overwhelming, frankly, and you know, just challenging. But there's so much opportunity. I think we live in such a great period in time where technology is just like the speed at which is accelerating, the types of solutions that are being developed is just, it's kind of the Wild West, which is fun. So, you know, I can't encourage firms enough to, you know, explore technology solutions, identify the bottlenecks in their organizations. Like, what are the things that maybe you've been doing it this way for 20 years, but it doesn't necessarily mean there's not a more efficient way to do it? And begin to look into some of those solutions and, you know, see if you can just begin to make small incremental changes, like one thing a month. If you think about 12 things over the course of the year, even if it's only like a 5% improvement each time, that will actually have significant improvement to your organization.
Those are really good ideas. And, you know, I totally agree with you about the fear of technology that some firms have. You know, it was not that many years ago when I moved to a very small firm that was still doing work papers and paper. Everything in paper. And the owner, former owner of the firm, great guy, used software just to type the numbers in from his paper worksheets. Yeah, he did everything. No. Yeah. So I came in and said, no, I'm not doing that. I'm going to figure out how to do this paper lesson.
Well, and you know, you bring up another good point. So you think about this, like leveraging technology to help with the efficiency of the processes. But the additional benefit is, frankly, people don't want to work somewhere that is not embracing these types of solutions. So if you're not doing it, not only are you making it incredibly inefficient, you're also risking the talent that you do have. You know, unless maybe that talent's been around with you since the day you started the firm, in which case you're going to have a hard time attracting new talent.
This is very true. Very true. And going along with changes, you know, until recently, the business model for accounting firms really hadn't changed much for decades. Yeah. billing by the hour, pyramidal org chart with the partners up at the top and a bunch of staff people at the bottom. But we are seeing more people move away from the billable hour and create new organizational structures. What are some of the changes that you are seeing?
Oh, wow. There's a lot. One of the things that I'm seeing firms do that just, it makes so much sense is finding new ways to compensate their team for becoming efficient. Really, historically, mm-hmm. we've not done that. In fact, we've mm-hmm. compensated them to be inefficient. So, finding ways to compensate the team to create efficiencies. If you can support a higher volume of business, then you should be rewarded for that and not penalized for, creating higher volume just by working slowly. So, seeing firms do some alternative types of compensation that really incentivizes their teams to be thoughtful about how they use time and how they are efficient on jobs, but also how they are promoting additional revenue. So one of the additional things that for decades has been true within firms is we don't tend to charge appropriately for what we do. So we accept additional scope and just, it's a 30 minutes, add 30 minutes here, add 30 minutes there. And if we can begin to price things in a way that yes, we can take on that project. That project is going to cost X, Y, Z. You can actually empower your staff to have those conversations in a very confident manner. And by increasing the top line revenue and becoming efficient, you can become extremely profitable. So, I see firms beginning to create packages and, simplify the pricing for everybody because customers tend to like to know how much it's going to cost as well. And, the just kind of breaking up the compensation model, so the expense side of it, and it really becomes a big win for everybody. I will say, as much sense as this makes, I'm not seeing widespread adoption of this yet. I see it in a couple firms, and those firms are having an amazing amount of success. But there's definitely a lot of firms, I think, who are just holding on to that traditional approach, and they're running into challenges because the game is changing. So there's a lot of opportunity there to, begin to explore some of this stuff. And again, it is overwhelming. Maybe it's a little scary, but these are also things that you can do, like in a test tube. You can find a few clients that you have a really great relationship with, begin to, test out these types of approaches. And once you have success, it'll build momentum from there.
Yeah. I agree completely on your emphasis on efficiency, because that was not anything that was ever emphasized for me. It was, you've got to get your billable hour quotients in. You've got to make that, you've got to be at least 70% billable, and we want you to have so many billable hours, and your year to date, month to date, and all of this nonsense. And what the only metric that ever made sense to me was a report that I got for a while that correlated the work I did to the top line revenue that my efforts brought in. Yep. And that one made sense to me. Then I could see, okay, I should be bringing in about 3 times my salary.
Yep.
And I could see, I'm on track. I'm good. So I don't need to worry so much about billable hours. And that just made so much sense to me. Then they quit producing that report because it was really a pain for them to do, or I don't know why, but
Yeah. Well, and you bring up another good point. Something that I see in firms that is a deficiency is the ability to look at good data. So a lot of times in order to like incentivize efficiency and, you know, price things appropriately is as a firm, you have to be able to look at the data and understand the data and make decisions on the data. And historically, a lot of firms, some have done a really great job and they've put systems in where they can, you know, look at their billing data and look at their input data and make those analyses. But other firms don't have that level of information available to them. So then it's really, you're making decisions based on, you know, just kind of guesses. So I would say, you know, for firms, you need to think about like, in order for me to take on these types of initiatives or make these changes, what information do I need to know? And make sure that you're capturing that some way within your firm so that you can not only make good decisions, but then evaluate if those changes you've made have had positive results.
That's right. Yeah. And, you know, and I think that a challenge for firms will be to figure out how to move from measuring billable hours to measuring delivery on deadlines.
Right. Yes.
That's going to be a really hard shift for them. And I'm not sure there are any great tools out there to do that yet.
It's scarce. It's definitely scarce, and not many that are necessarily designed just for the accounting industry. There's definitely a variety of project management and task management tools. What I've found historically, and I by no means know all of them, but many of them struggle on the reporting side. So it may do a fine job of telling you what you need to do today or what you need to do this week. But then, you know, looking at the reporting to be able to identify those things like, hey, how many deliverables did Liz hit this week, you know, successfully? Mm-hmm. And how many was she late on? Those types of things aren't always part of those systems. So it's, yeah. You know, I think there are some gaps that need to be filled, I think, just by the vendors to help firms with that type of info.
Yeah. It's, you know, we have to wait for the vendors or figure out how to build our own tools.
Yeah. And that's, I don't know if you've seen the hashtag on Twitter recently, but there's, you know, a lot of friends of mine are doing this 100 days of no code where they're mm-hmm. looking at, you know, Airtable and Notion and all of these tools. And, you know, mm-hmm. I think building systems that are capable of doing this type of stuff that are kind of homegrown. So that's kind of fun.
Yeah. It takes a different breed of accountant to do that. Different from me, different from the ones I worked with.
Yeah, it's true. But, it's a neat time. And I think, you know, we're going to start seeing even more solutions that will help firms with that type of challenge.
Yeah. Now, what about growth? How do firms grow most successfully? Are there different ideas for solo firms or big firms?
You know, I don't know if there's different ideas, but I think there is definitely different levels of focus that I see. A lot of times, the smaller the firm, the more the manager or the owner is also in the day-to-day of ticking and tying. So the business development side of the house doesn't get so much focus because you're busy, you know, getting these projects completed. So, you know, you have to be deliberate. If you just hope that, you know, hanging your shingle is going to bring in the business, while there is, I would say, a really good market today, it's not necessarily going to produce even the clients that you want just by doing that. So, yeah. And so, you know, the larger firms, they definitely have dedicated resources for those types of activities. And my recommendation for the smaller firms is, one, you dedicate your time. So you set it apart. That is, you know, X number of hours a week are going to be spent on business development functions, whether that's sales meetings, whether that's outreach on, you know, maybe social media, LinkedIn or other forums. There's, you know, so many ways that you can also incentivize referrals. And I think this is probably one of the most underutilized methods that firms don't take advantage of, is explicitly asking your happy customers, your happy clients who are paying you for referrals, because oftentimes they know other business owners, they know other people who are similar to them that are looking for a skilled accountant. So, you know, explicitly asking those customers, you know, even sending them little gifts and thanking them for referrals is a really easy way to not only grow your practice, but to accelerate the sales process, because a referral that comes in to talk to you is typically ready to buy before you've even opened your mouth. They've already gotten the download from their friends. So I would really say, if there's any firm that is looking and trying to grow their customer base, put some time and energy into explicitly asking your clients to refer you to their friends and family that are also looking for a skilled accountant. It's a really great resource.
I agree with you there. The downside is that sometimes you get clients referred to you who are not great matches.
That's true.
And you know, then do you keep this client who may be a nightmare to work with, because you don't want to make your really great client unhappy, or what do you do?
Yeah, that's a really great point. And that's something else that I think goes along with growing your practice, is also being selective about those clients. And so, you know, you're right. If you're asking for referrals and, you know, somebody's referring in, you know, crappy opportunities, for one, stop asking that person for a referral, because clearly they don't have good friends. But two, I think, you know, you can approach it professionally. And I think this is, something historically is counterintuitive, but, to be able to say, hey, you know, it's really great meeting you. Congratulations on your success with your business, XYZ. I don't believe that we are the right firm for you. I'm happy to, you know, refer you to other firms that might be willing to work with you, but, you know, do it in a very delicate and professional manner. And I think you can, you know, say no without pissing anybody off, you know, and you can follow up with the person who referred them and say, hey, thanks for the referral. I want to let you know, I referred them here, and, you know, they don't really fit our type of firm and what we're trying to accomplish. Those types of proactive conversations go a long way and will probably save a lot of heartache, because when you bring in bad clients, your staff tend to get pretty frustrated. So which kind of goes back to our earlier conversation, you want to keep them pretty happy. So don't bring in bad business.
No. And I'd say, you know, it's often a mercy killing to get rid of the bad clients.
It's true. Yeah.
It's a net win to get rid of some of them.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. Create capacity for the good ones.
Mm-hmm. That is very true. Now, what skills do accountants need to be successful today and in the future? You know, it used to be you had to be really good with a 10 key. You had to have the IRS code in your head. You know, what do they need now? Those aren't really needed.
I do still keep my 10 key on my desk, even though I'm not an accountant anymore. But
don't have one.
I do. It's one of those things once you get it down. I think there's a few things, and communication, I think now more than ever, is I don't want to say a lost art, because I don't even know that necessarily it's been something that has really been done well over the years. But I think now more than ever, we are hyper collaborative. There is, like, high volume of email, potentially like Slack or Microsoft Teams. There's, you know, text messaging and just all of these different forums for collaboration. And I think that is a skill that is really critical for being able to collaborate, especially collaboration being very different from when you were in the office and you could just like plop down at somebody's desk and have a discussion, you know, where you're in a remote environment frequently these days, that opportunity doesn't exist. So now you're like sending a message in Slack, and if you're doing a poor job of communicating that message, it can lead to, you know, misfires, misinterpretations, you know, conflict, like all types of things. So I really believe that, you know, really taking intentional steps to think about your communication and the way that you collaborate with people is really critical in this day and age. The second thing I would say is the resourcefulness. I work with a lot of people, collaborate with a lot of them. And there's a group of people who know where to go get the answers and they'll just go do it. There's another group of people who they don't mind asking, which is great, but there's also a degree of, well, have you tried to find it first? If the answer is yes, I don't mind answering it for you. But if the answer is no, go figure it out. Like, go be resourceful, use your skills to, you know, if you know that the process is documented somewhere, read the process. If you have questions on it, then let's have that conversation. But I do feel like there's been kind of this evolution of people just kind of wanting to be spoon-fed everything. And the people that I want to work with, the people that will be the most successful, I think are those who, you know, can, you know, be resourceful in finding the answers, finding the solutions, researching things, and, you know, kind of figuring it out.
Yeah, you know, figuring it out was something that I always tried. I always used that as first attempt. And then my last resort was to ask somebody. And many times the things that I couldn't find answers to were so esoteric that they were like,
we don't have an answer. It's a great question we need to solve.
Yeah. I don't know. That's a really good question. Yeah.
I agree with you. I you know, and there is a delicate balance. I know I've had, you know, conversations with team members where it's like, I'm sorry that you spent 2 hours looking for that. Like I could have spared you that. Like, so I think there is like a delicate balance of, you know, don't spin your tires. Figure out what that correct point is where like, I've kind of exhausted the obvious things. And, you know, every additional minute I put into it probably isn't going to be valuable at this point. So it's a delicate balance, but I would much prefer the individual who, you know, searches the lengths of the earth to find the solution than, you know, somebody who just wants it answered for him every time.
That's right. Yeah. And documenting processes was another big thing I did.
Yeah,
everything that I did, I wrote down exactly how to do it.
Yeah. And that's hard. I mean, I struggle with process documentation in written form, which is why I have become a huge fan of tools like Loom and Vidyard and some of these other like video recording tools for documenting process. It's just a great way to kind of like, if you have something, do a quick video on it and share it out. Because it's not easy for everybody to document process. It can be a little bit overwhelming. Right. So, you know, if that's not your strength, record a video and talk through it. And different mediums work better for different people. So yeah, but you're right. I agree.
Yeah. And having a video has the bonus of showing the screen and showing what you're actually doing instead of somebody saying, well, where do I go? What screen? Right. What is this button you're talking about?
That's right. You only said arrow. Is it the green arrow or the blue arrow?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we've talked about things that accountants should pick up, additional things they should do. What should accountants stop doing immediately?
What should they stop doing immediately? I would say one of the things they should stop doing immediately is assuming everybody is dumb. So I think, you know, I'm frequently reminding people, your clients, your customers, the general public, they are asking you these dumb questions because they trust, they value, and they just don't know. And, you know, I frequently see these threads and talk to people who are just so frustrated because their client is confused about their 1099, or they don't understand what happened, why they owe taxes, or did they something change on their W-2? But this is an opportunity to create value in the relationship. So, you know, stop being frustrated with those types of questions or interactions, and, you know, flip it to recognize this is opportunity to create value in that relationship, and be an expert, be an educator, be an expert. So, you know, I think when you flip your attitude towards it, I think it'll be much more fulfilling aspect of your life instead of just a pure frustration. So I would say that's one thing to definitely stop doing. And two, you know, stop. We already talked about it, but I'm going to say it again. Stop doing what worked yesterday. You know, there are plenty of things that we do that, yes, it gets you to the goal, but there's probably a better way. And, you know, so stop just doing what you did yesterday just because that's what worked yesterday. And, you know, start looking for new ways of doing things.
Yeah. We are in a golden age of analytics and AI and RPA tools. So there are so many different ways that things can be done.
Yes. Yeah. And that's been one thing I think that has helped me in my career is, you know, every time I'm doing something, if I'm doing it again, like every iteration, I'm thinking about there's got to be a better way. There's just got to be a better way. Like, this can't be the only way to get there. And, you know, kind of having that mindset, not necessarily to like change it at every single time, because that just creates chaos. Especially if you're not documenting process, but thinking about it, like every time you're doing something, like especially if it's a repetitive task, like, is there another way? Maybe do a few Google searches, talk to some friends. To your point, it's kind of this golden age of opportunity and information and knowledge that you can tap into.
Absolutely. Now, why do you think accountants have such a hard time making changes?
I think humans generally have a hard time making changes. And I think accountants struggle primarily out of fear for how it will impact their clients or their customers. There's, you know, this just fear that you will change something that 1 out of 100 clients might be unhappy about, or, you know, that it will create an unanticipated thing that will put relationships at risk. And, you know, that fear, you know, just kind of paralyzes people from actually taking action to make change. And if they would really focus on the greater good of why you are making that change, and then, you know, preparing people for change, because I think that's the second part of the problem that people run into, is maybe they've made a change in the past that went a little bit sideways, but they failed to prepare anybody for that change. They didn't communicate it. They didn't let people know, hey, we are doing X. You should expect Y to happen. And people are usually very comfortable if they've been prepared that a change is coming. Your staff, your clients, all, you know, members of the organization that will be impacted by it. So, you can manage risk. And the way to manage risk is not by choosing to do nothing. It's by just being intentional about what you are doing.
I agree with you there. You know, I saw so many times where, well, this is just the way we've been doing it. So not going to rock the boat.
That's it. My customers expected this way for, you know, 20 years. They've dropped that envelope at the front door and, you know, heaven forbid we ask for maybe a different way to do it. It really is a limiting exercise for, you know, organizations that don't want to change. You need to.
Yeah. Why? I think in terms of dropping the envelopes at the front desk, the pandemic really put a kibosh on that. You know, there weren't too many firms that were able to continue doing that because that meant that they had to have somebody there and nobody wanted to be in the office by themselves.
And, you know, to your point, like we just went through a massive period where you had no choice but to change. And generally speaking, in the accounting profession, I don't know many accountants who are making life and death decisions every day. We're not in the healthcare profession. And so, you know, while, you know, all of that change happened, I don't think anybody's life was put at risk due to accounting things that changed in our accounting workflow, in the way that we're operating our firm. We survived it. We figured it out. And so it's proof it can be done. It may not have been easy. It may not have, you know, been without stress, but we did make it to the other side. Like we've figured a lot of things out. People are back at the office. People are doing things. But for some period of time, you did actually make change, and change happened and it occurred, and you can do it again.
That is a really good point that should give people confidence to know that they can change, that they are resilient, they're more powerful than they think they are.
Yes. Yep. Absolutely.
Yeah. Now, client accounting services has been big lately, or client advisory services, whatever you want to call it.
Yep.
What do you think is the next big thing?
Oh man, hey, get out my magic eight ball and take a guess. You know, I really think there is going to be a big trend of this kind of no code consulting. There are a lot of accountants who are very good at process and very good at, you know, using tools in a resourceful way to not only help their firm, but to help their clients. And I think there's probably going to be a lot of businesses who will be looking for some level of expertise to help with those types of things within their businesses. So, you know, I think it's a little bit of an evolution of, you know, kind of the maybe advisory and consulting of firms, but I think it's a great opportunity because these are things that will have ongoing value to the businesses and therefore become really easy to, you know, charge for. These are good revenue generating opportunities and while having very positive impact to the client. So I think we're going to see a bigger trend of firms beginning to help their clients with these types of things. As firms develop tools for themselves, you know, why not take that expertise and extend it to your clients? A lot of it will translate in, you know, frankly, probably simpler versions than what it takes to do it in an accounting firm. I think that'll be some great opportunity for firms who are really willing to kind of dive in and just, you know, kind of figure it out and learn.
Learning and trying to figure it out. That's going to be the future.
Yep.
Trying to figure out how to do it differently.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, I was at a firm where there was a full-time IT person, the role that you used to have years ago. But they never really leveraged his skills too much to go out and help the clients in their businesses. Right. They did that a little bit, but not as much as they could have.
Yep.
And I think that was really, really sad because that could have been a really big revenue stream for them.
Well, you think about, and yes, I absolutely agree. And I look at companies like Amazon and what Amazon has done. A large majority of the logistics that they have created in order to deliver the products that they deliver, they have made into businesses. So they now have like a smart warehousing system that they will sell to businesses. They've, you know, have a logistics software system. The entire Amazon Web Services, AWS Cloud was, they needed that infrastructure and they realized that they could sell that infrastructure to other businesses who also need it. So, you know, I think Amazon has done such a great job of kind of modeling that, like, you know, as we figure out solutions for our firms, think about ways that you can possibly extend those solutions or that expertise into your clients' businesses.
Yeah. And I think that note of being helpful to your clients is a perfect way to end this conversation, because that's what we always hope that we are doing, being helpful to our clients. Now, thank you, Byron, for your time.
Thank you.
And if people want to reach out to you, where's the best place to find you?
Oh, gosh, all over the place. You can definitely find me on Twitter, Byron_CPA. You know, my email address, Byron@botkeeper.com. It's Y before R. Everybody wants to put the R before the Y, but I promise you the Y comes first. You know, those are probably the two best places to hit me up quickly. And then LinkedIn, you can message me on LinkedIn, but I will tell you, I'm terrible about LinkedIn messaging. I'll get there eventually, but it's slow.
I'm slow there too sometimes, but that's the way it is. All right. Well, thank you so much, Byron, and you have a wonderful day.
Thank you for listening to the CPA Trendlines podcast, a production of CPATrendlines.com, now available on iTunes. We hope you'll rate and review us wherever you find your podcasts to help other accountants find our show more easily. For more information, you can go to CPATrendlines.com.